As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Everybody, welcome to The Athletic Support, your podcast on the Montreal Canadiens by TheAthletic.com. I am Marc-Antoine Godin on this beautiful, rainy Wednesday afternoon in Buffalo, New York. I am with Arpin Basu, just as usual. Hello, Arpin. How are you, my friend?
I am good, my man. You know, we've now spent roughly 2 days hanging around in a hotel lobby. You know, for those who don't understand the Buffalo reference, Marc-Antoine and I are at the NHL Scouting Combine, where obviously all the top prospects, some of the best prospects for the upcoming NHL draft are gathered to do testing and meet with teams, and meet with people like Marc-Antoine and I. So, but before we get into that, or, you know, we're not going to get into that on this show, we will do so shortly, but today, obviously, with Martin St. Louis signing his three-year contract with the Canadiens, which was kind of an inevitability that didn't really surprise anyone. We thought we should get into that before getting into the draft stuff at a later date.
That's right. So I guess, hey, two episodes instead of one this week. So that's great. So on to Martin St. Louis. You just mentioned it, Arpin. This is no surprise whatsoever that this is settled. It's funny because Kent Hughes had mentioned, like, in an interview a few weeks ago that he could picture something around a 3-year contract for Martin St. Louis, and boom, that's what happened.
He said it would be a minimum 3-year contract.
A minimum of three. Yeah. That's it. So, but honestly, it would have been bold to go beyond 3 years. If, you know, I think that. Everybody, I think all parties involved are rather comfortable with how things are evolving, and they're happy with what they're seeing, you know, both from the coaching side and how the team views this coach. But still, I mean, if you decide to go beyond 3 years and in the meantime things go sideways, it becomes long term. So I think it's a natural. A normal duration for a contract. So in terms of, I don't know, maybe that the term surprises you more than it does to me, but to me, it's exactly what I was expecting.
No, it doesn't surprise me. I mean, it was interesting. You rarely hear a GM who is in the midst of contract negotiations with a coach come out and say, this is the minimum term we would like to give him. which is why it kind of it struck me. And then to see that it comes out at 3 years. But, you know, one part of the term that I find interesting is that you could make the argument that this is also kind of the term for, you know, more or less how long the Canadians are going to take to reach a different phase of what they're trying to accomplish here. Like, by the end of this contract, if Martin St-Louis survives to the end of the contract, the outlook and the priorities for the organization are going to shift from what is clearly right now a player development focused, you know, list of priorities, with player development obviously being the most important and being at the top of that list and being the priority. And it's something that I think Martin St-Louis has proven capable of doing in his short 37-game stint as coach of the Canadiens. By year three, would you say it's fair that the Canadiens should reasonably expect to be competitive by that point, and that Martin St-Louis will need to hopefully himself develop as a coach where he could kind of shift gears from player development to being an actual coach of a competitive team, which I think has different skill sets required, has different priorities, has different decisions that need to be made. And you know, he also has the luxury of developing as a coach at the NHL level to maybe one day become a coach of a competitive team.
So yeah, on the one hand, I'm not sure if we can say that they're going to shift gear at any precise moment, if it's going to happen, you know, in year two or year three or whatever. I think that it's going to be an evolutive process where it goes hand in hand with the performances of the team. So it's going to be like organic. And also, but I think that you're entirely right when you say that in 3 years, the Canadiens would be more competitive. And that is because, in my mind, there is no doubt that Nick Suzuki and Cole Caulfield will reach their peak performances, and they'll reach true hockey maturity three years from now, especially Nick Suzuki. So I think in that sense, since those two guys are the two new pillars, or the pillars of the next generation of the Montreal Canadiens, I think it's only normal at this point that you try to sync everything based on their own development and all the kids that are going to follow. And by that time, I think it's fair to assume that one or two younger defensemen will have risen to a point where they really have entered the new core of this team. So you're right. In that sense, the 3 years seems very fitting, because there's going to be a symbiosis, like an alignment of St. Louis' contract and the team becoming competitive.
Yeah, and I would just add to that, I mean, the number one pick the Canadiens are going to make in July would probably be added to that group. So, you know, for a number one overall pick, I think 3 years is a fair expectation for that player to also be kind of hitting his peak in a way. If you look at previous number one overall picks, you know, not counting the generational ones or the ones that were really, really exceptional, which obviously there is no such player in this draft. But even the ones who are kind of seen as more, let's say, average or you know, let's say somewhat underwhelming for a number one overall pick, like Hischier, Nugent Hopkins, all the guys that are kind of being mentioned in the same breath as Shane Wright, or if it's Slavkovsky or whoever, you know, that 3 year period would also represent, if all goes according to plan, that player as well would be part of that core. And Martin St-Louis himself would have to have shown a certain ability to, you know, to coach a winning team. And it might sound ridiculous when you hear that, but this really is a perfect situation for Martin St-Louis to come in as a coach, because he has some pretty clear ideas on player development. And I think we saw those in action over his 37 games. And, you know, everyone talks about, obviously, the Cole Caulfield and Suzuki, their production under St-Louis, that speaks for itself. But Romanov doing what he did under St-Louis, Rem Pitlick. I mean, there's lots of guys like him, Tim, you know, the stuff he's trying to do with Josh Anderson, the stuff he's trying to do with Brendan Gallagher to sort of expand their games. it's all player development stuff, right? Not only for young players, but even for veteran players. But at some point,
Jake Evans.
Yeah, this is a long list of guys. Pretty much everyone on that team has had some sort of meeting with Martin St. Louis at some point where he's shown them video and said, oh, I think maybe you could try and do this and this and this. But when you're the coach of a winning team, and he spoke pretty eloquently about the difference today, was that, I'm not gonna prioritize winning the next game or these short-term gains at the detriment of long-term development, and these people are going to help us win for a long time. Well, that's great, and that's what the Canadians need right now, and Martin St. Louis seems like a guy who's fully equipped to do that. I think he would admit that he probably is not yet prepared as a coach to be the coach of a team that does prioritize winning every game, that does that every game it matters, and that you can't just keep throwing kids out there if it means you're losing, that you have to make decisions when your expectations are wildly different than they are now. And I think the 3-year term in addition gives him an opportunity to grow into the role, learn sort of the ins and outs of coaching at the NHL level, game tactics, bench management, all the things that matter more when you're a winning team than they do right now for the Canadiens.
Yeah. In the column that I'm writing about Martin St. Louis today, I'm mentioning the fact that it's crazy the number of people in the NHL that keep reminding us how the NHL is not a development league, right? And that the development happens at lower levels, and once you reach the NHL, you must be ready to perform. And in that sense, Martin St. Louis goes completely against the grain, because he views the NHL as a development league. Not only for young players, but as you said, for your older players too. But this is whenever there's no success, and by success I mean carrying, lifting the cup. As long as you're not lifting the cup, there is some sort of development that needs to be done. And I think that in that sense, he views his own part as a coach. He sees himself as a developing coach. And he's going to do tons of development with this team in the coming years. But it's a refreshing point of view, and it's something that's certainly in the minority, because like the older generation will say, no, this is, I want to be working with guys that are considered as more or less finished products. But when you have someone, when you have a coach who says, well, you're never a finished product, so we're going to continue working with you. Then it changes the approach completely. And I think that it really benefits the Canadian, considering the place that they're at right now.
Yeah, which kind of makes this a no-brainer, but it does, I think, speak, it's funny, like this organization is not willing, or probably more appropriate, more accurately, not able to establish some sort of timeline. They're not willing to say, oh, this is a 3-year plan, this is a 5-year plan. And you know what? Power to them, because there's no benefit to doing that. If you come out, the way Bob Gainey did, or any other, lots of former general managers and on many teams, where they come out, oh, this is a 5-year plan, this is a 4-year plan, this is that. All it can do is set you up for failure, in a sense, because, no one's really going to give you much credit if it does indeed turn out to be a 5-year plan. The only time that's going to ever come back is when it's not a 5-year plan. It becomes a 6, 7, or 8-year plan. So I'm not criticizing the Canadians for not being able to come up with a timeline, but it's just, there's just a whole host of factors here where, without saying so, the Canadians can kind of take their time. And you listen to Martin St. Louis talk, after he signed his contract, or after it was announced at least, he didn't seem like a man who was in a huge rush. It's going to be a process. And when he says like the priority is to build a winning culture and all these kind of process-based terms, it sounds like the start of something that will be long. And you hear Kent Hughes, how many times he said it, Jeff Gorton said it, Martin St. Louis has said it, that the goal here is to build a team and build a program where the Canadians are sustainably successful, where they are a playoff team every single year. And they are so far from that right now, with so many question marks kind of looming over this team, that Marte St. Louis just kind of seems like the ideal guy to step in right now. Like, could you, like, let's take the language component out of it. Let's say the Canadians had their pick of this massive crop of free agent coaches mm-hmm. who exist on the market right now, like Barry Trotz and Peter DeBoer and all these, like Travis Green, like, this list goes, Paul Maurice is out there. There's tons of guys that if the language component did not exist for the Canadians, they could conceivably. But out of all those guys, I can honestly say that someone like Martin St. Louis is probably most appropriate for this team right now. It's not, you can't bring in a seasoned coach and say, well, we're going to develop players for the next year or two or three. We don't even know how long it's going to take, but all we know is that we're going to be in a player development mode more than we are in a winning mode. I don't know how many established coaches with options would want to step into something like that and whether they would be able to kind of, you know, to make that their priority. And they have a guy in Martin St. Louis, and he said it quite explicitly today that he's not going to, definitively not going to sacrifice the development of young players for the short-term benefit of winning a hockey game or two this season, upcoming season. And when you think about it, it's not an overly surprising thing to hear him say. But at the same time, this is numerous times we've heard Martin St. Louis talk about how winning games is not his priority. And it's not often you hear NHL coaches say that. But it's true. He's just saying the truth out loud that right now our priority is to develop guys so that we can be a sustainable winner and not making sure we win this specific game on a Thursday night in November.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Well, it's what we tried during this press conference, this media availability to, we asked in so many different ways to figure out if what he was saying and, you know, in his first 37 games at the helm, that when he said, well, it's winning games on a Tuesday night or whatever, winning or losing is not the end all goal at this point. Is this going to remain the same next season or beyond? And I think it goes back to what we were saying earlier, to the fact that this is going to be an evolutive process. But what makes him the right man for the job is that he speaks the same language as the guy who just hired him. You talk, you know, the bullet points in Kent Hughes' plan or discourse or what he has in mind, it seems to be pretty very much aligned with what Martin St. Louis believes. So in that sense, when they talk about sustained success, you know, that the goal is sustained success, they seem to have exactly the same vision of what it's going to take to get there, and that they're committed in showing the same amount of patience to it. It's funny because I was talking to someone here in Buffalo earlier this week let's just say that he knows both men pretty well, who said that Kent Hughes, when he first arrived and took the job as GM, he had all these ideas in mind of what he could do to turn things around quickly. And the thing that he's realized is that it might take longer than he first thought. because of all the constraints that are operating, you know, the contracts issue, the salary cap, you know, the lack of cap flexibility that's really struggling with this team right now. But so it might take a bit longer, and for that you need to have a coach that's willing to go along that process. Because yeah, you could bring a more experienced coach, but are these other more seasoned coach would be willing to go through it? It's not sure. And if they were, would they have the sort of philosophy or the style of hockey that would go along with what Kent Hughes wants to implement for the Montreal Canadiens? Let's just say, okay, let's bring in a name from the old days. But Jacques Martin used to be considered a guy who was good at taking young teams and bring them together and build them up towards respectability. But he was not necessarily considered as a coach who would be like sort of a closer. But he had a very defensive-minded way of coaching, which is not Martin Saint-Louis' way. And the Canadians seem to be shifting to more offensive ways, more dynamic ways, which I'm sure that every fan will be more than happy to keep following. But that's yet another example where the coach and the GM, their mindset aligns very well. So it's, to me, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, and I think further to that is, you know, if I'm a Canadiens fan right now, I have not heard a definitive, as I mentioned earlier, timeline or whatever for when this team will be competitive. And it brings me kind of back to the letter, the Rangers letter that Jeff Gorton was, I wouldn't say 100% responsible for, but he was the general manager of the Rangers at the time when that letter was issued to their fan base to communicate to them that they are undergoing some form of a rebuild, and that some players that the fans like are going to be traded away, and they were very transparent about it and decided to do that. Now the Canadians haven't done that, but to me, everything that we've heard since the end of the season from Kent Hughes, from Martin Saint-Louis, and even from some of the players, I mean, it just seems like if you're a fan of the Canadians, if you haven't gotten that message yet, you should have gotten the message that this is they're entering into a process that they don't want to label with a name, and they don't want to kind of tie themselves to a timeline. But it's clear, I think it's pretty safe to say at this point, this is not going to be a 2-year process. Like, it's just not going to be that quick of a thing where they're ready to start making the playoffs year after year after year, like they keep saying, 2 seasons from now. And it's, you know, and kind of the beauty of it from a Canadian's perspective, and, you know, we've both been covering this team for a long time, and they've never really undergone a process like this. They've actually, not only have they not done it, they have fought it at every turn, insisting that the fan base would never accept it. And now, without really saying that they're doing it, and without doing it in a scorched earth kind of drastic kind of way, I do feel they're entering a period that we haven't really seen this team ever really enter, or at least not in a long time. And I find it really fascinating how they're kind of describing it and talking about it and saying it in ways that suggest that this is the case. But they're not coming right out and bluntly saying so the way Jeff Gorton's Rangers did. But ultimately, the message, I think, should be received in much the same way. Because even when the Rangers sent that letter, they didn't go scorched earth. As a matter of fact, they retooled relatively quickly. You know, they did send out some veterans, picked up a couple of draft picks. But, you know, they had some, obviously, some shrewd and fortunate free agent signings. They had some good fortune in the draft lottery. But that team is currently in the Eastern Conference Finals. And it didn't take that long for them to get there. And they're legitimately there, you know. And so I just feel like the Canadiens are entering a very similar period in their organizational build that the Rangers were back when they sent that letter.
Okay, so you mentioned the Rangers, who are, in the conference finals, I think in large part, because of their goaltender who's becoming a franchise goaltender for them. And what's interesting is that some of those other pieces that Jeff Gorton contributed in bringing to New York are only scratching the surface and are only going to get better. So you can think that this team is going to be good for quite a while, because it's, for now, you could argue that, yeah, it's Shesterkin and friends, but right. Soon enough, it's going to be, you know, with, I'm not sure about Kako, but I think that slowly but surely, we see Lafreniere coming into his own.
Hedl, same thing.
For sure. Same thing. Many guys on defense also. It's a strong blue line. So, but it starts, for now, it starts with a franchise goaltender. And it leads me to ask you this. In all that, you know, we talk about the next 3 years because it's the length of Martin St-Louis' contract. Where does Carey Price fit in all this? We heard Kent Hughes on Tuesday, and there's still nothing definitive about Carey Price status. They hope to get some clarity before the draft or before free agency, and it's not sure at all that they're going to be able to get it. But where does, considering the salary that he's making, what do you make of Carey Price in this retooling, rebuilding, and you know, restructuring of the team so that they become competitive within the next 3 years?
Well, you know, Ken Hughes suggested that they're not going to get, but he did say something on Tuesday that I am writing about. You can read about it in The Athletic, but I will talk about it here, is that, you know, one thing he did say is that the only clarity that they could get prior to the start of the season is if, and he used the word somehow, a doctor out there tells them that Carey Price cannot play. At which point, that's the only clarity that they can hope to achieve before training camp. Because otherwise, they're going to have to just test out the knee. So they're going to start the season with the same unknown. And obviously, they're going to try some things and some treatment and try to strengthen the knee and really try to be proactive about it over the offseason. But they're basically going to roll the dice to see if his knee can hold up after a full summer of preparation. But he did go see a specialist in Pittsburgh at the end of the regular season and has not seen any other doctors since. And there's no, as far as Ken Hughes mentioned, there's no procedure scheduled at this point, which is something that Carey Price said he was open to at the end of the season when he expressed doubt that if his knee remained in its current state, he could not withstand a season of being a number one goaltender in the National Hockey League. So, you know, I thought there was some clarity from Ken Hughes on that question. And yes, there's the 3-year term of Martin St. Louis. There's 4 years left on Carey Price's contract. It's just another factor that makes it so that the Canadians don't really have much of a choice but to go into a process where they have to be patient and slowly develop players and wait it out. And figure out a world in which Carey Price is either playing goal for them, fully healthy and able to perform as well as he could reasonably be expected to perform at his age, or not, and on LTIR, where they have access to that money, and not exactly in that way, but still they have access to exceed the cap by the amount of his $10.5 million salary. What they have right now is something in between the two, which is kind of the worst place to be. They don't know if they have a healthy Carey Price who can withstand a full season. They don't have a Carey Price that they can definitively put on LTI for the entire season. And so they have to wait and see. So this is just another, and I would argue is actually the trigger point of the Canadians just accepting the reality that this is going to be a longer process than maybe Kent Hughes anticipated when he first took the job, as you mentioned earlier. It's something that's entirely out of their hands, but I would argue that it's kind of, in a way, a blessing, because them taking their time to reach a certain level of competitiveness and a certain stability as a franchise that is consistently competitive and consistently in the playoff mix, is the better way to go about it. And Carey Price's situation kind of forces them to go that way, I think.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm sure the fans are ready for that anyway. You know, you were saying it earlier how the Canadiens has always been very, they've been worried about the fans' reaction if they were to go that way, and they always assumed that the fans would not be ready to follow them in that. But you just have to look at the teams that are successful. I mean, apart from the Boston Bruins, who've been really able to remain constantly competitive without going through a rebuild and having one of the best lines in hockey to really drive the bus for them. All the other teams, there's no magic recipe. You've got to go through some hardship and recover from it. And you look at the way Steve Yzerman is going about his business with the Detroit Red Wings. Well, it's pretty much the same. He's applying the same plan that he did for Tampa 10 years ago. So there's no magic recipe. And I think that if everybody wants to, for the Montreal Canadiens to be competitive, well, they just have to stop, you know, just nibbling around the edges and stop just trying to survive basically every year and try to leave it up to chance as to whether they're going to make the playoffs or not, and just be serious about building a winner. And so I hope that, and I know that we've discussed this in another episode earlier, but I hope that the reaction they got late in the season from the fans is going to be indicative enough for them that's what the fans are ready for, and that in that sense, they should have the people's blessing in Montreal that it's okay to do so, you know? Even though I'm sure that there's going to be some pundits every now and then who are going to show signs of impatience and say, well, you know, how come we don't see results just yet? And they're going to be ironic about the whole thing. But in the grand scheme of things, if people understand what they're doing, they'll see that this is the only way to go.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Yeah, but which brings us, you know, you mentioning the Red Wings and Steve Yzerman brings us to another aspect of the whole Carey Price situation, because when you mentioned the Rangers and Shesterkin, you know, I mean, if you can look past the Oilers and the Avalanche on the Western side, because clearly they're a big argument against what I'm just about to say, where, you know, most of the time teams that are contending need extremely solid goaltending, and I think the Eastern Conference Final that's what's so interesting about the playoffs this year, is there's one side where goaltending is an afterthought, and there's the other side where goaltending is the prime matchup, Vasilevskiy versus Shesterkin. But you look at the way Steve Yzerman has gone about things in Detroit, Moritz Seider, sixth overall, probably his number one defenseman for the next 10 to 15 years. He's got not necessarily a center to build around, but you've got Lucas Raymond, fourth overall in 2020, the year after. You know, pretty darn good rookie season. Looks like he could be sort of a play driver at forward, another pillar. And then last year, 2021, Steve Yzerman trades up to go get Sebastian Kosa at 15th overall as his potentially Andrei Vasilevskiy of the future for Detroit. And so, you know, the Canadiens are in a bit of an unfortunate situation this year, in that they have tons of draft capital. There's no premium goalie available this year in the draft. There's a couple of guys that might be interesting, but there's no one who really stands out as being a surefire future NHL superstar or star goaltender, or even a surefire number one goaltender in the NHL. But that's something that the Canadians are going to need to start addressing somehow, because even if Carey Price plays this year, it's obvious that the clock is ticking and that he's not going to play through the end of his contract, regardless. Like, let's say this summer, through treatment or through whatever, they managed to find a way to get Price's knee where he could play a season and play 50-odd games and not be in total discomfort the whole time and be able to perform at a quote-unquote acceptable level, as Price said it himself. The reality is the Canadians need – there's a succession plan that needs to be put in place. They're not going to be able to do it through the draft this year. Developing a goaltender takes time. You know, like, that's another thing where Igor Shesterkin, I think, is somewhat the exception to the rule. Like, he's
– Well, he was drafted in 2014.
Right. He was drafted in 2014. I'm just talking about from the time he came to North America. But you're right. Exactly. So that's, you know, that's 8 years ago. So that's something that the Canadians need to keep in mind on their plan, because in an ideal world – they would be able to draft a guy like that this year. It's just that it just so happens that this is the year where they have the number one overall pick and there's no clear-cut consensus superstar number one overall talent. And there's also no clear-cut surefire number one goaltender available in this draft.
No. Well, there's always this debate. Are goalies worthy of being drafted in the first round? And every now and then you'll see guys that are. Obviously, Vasilevsky was one. Knight with Florida was one. Askarov recently was one with Nashville. But I mean, they're far and in between. There's not that many of them. So most likely you can have guys that become number one goalies, but they were drafted later in the draft. And in that sense, the Canadians right now have four goalies in their system. That's, you know, that's relevant to pay attention to. Caden Primeau right now is reestablishing himself in a very interesting way with how he's been playing in the American Hockey League's playoffs. I mean, in seven games, he's got a goal against average under two at 1.93, and he's got a .936 save percentage. So this bodes very well. And then they've got three guys, one in Europe in Frederick Dekau, who we saw briefly at the World Championships. I think he got shelled in that game. but I think he's a Danish player, but he seems to be – he's doing okay. But I suspect that between him, Joe Verbeek, who's in North Bay, he's actually the team that ousted Shane Wright from the playoffs, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, that's correct.
That's right. So there's him. But I think that there – their biggest prospect is in Ohio State, and that's Jakub Dobish. Mm-hmm. And that's probably another guy to keep an eye on. But in all those cases, and Primeau, we cross our fingers and we hope that he's going to go back on that track where we thought that the Canadians might have a possible number one in their hands, or at worst, a guy that would be of the Jake Allen level. But well, even if it was a guy like Dobesh who would eventually stand out and show that he's worthy of becoming eventually a number one guy, he's still years away. So this is a problem that's yet to be solved, either through trades or in the 2023 draft, where you would draft a guy who could be fast tracked to the NHL. But it might become like a sort of a crippling issue for the Canadians, or a bit of a stumbling, not a crippling issue, but a stumbling block in them becoming competitive in that window of 3 years. Because if Primeau is not up to the task, then they got no real alternative and they'll have to patch up some other way. So, and you see a team, for example, like New Jersey, who's really stacking up some great prospects, great young players, on offense. I mean, they're ready to take the next step, but on the back end, and especially in goal, with the way that Mackenzie Blackwood has imploded this year, well, they're going to have to solve that issue. And until they do, they're not going to be able to become the competitive team that, when you look at their group of forwards, suggests that they're ready to become really soon, in a foreseeable future.
Yeah. I mean, I agree, but I mean, it's just another factor. I mean, it's, you know, when you think of everything that we just talked about and you make reference to, you know, when I made reference to the letter that the Rangers sent out, you know, the Canadians haven't sent that letter, but they might as well have. Like, I feel like they've done it without doing it. You know, it's really, so I think what the,
it was, you know, sent all, with invisible ink.
Yes, Arpin. It's being like insinuated without being bluntly stated in any way. And again, not a criticism. It's just, you know, the Rangers decided to do it one way. And frankly, the Rangers kind of had to do it because they were about to trade some pretty well-liked players on that team. You know, I mean, that was, Matt Zuccarello was a year away from getting traded. Ryan McDonagh got traded. JT Miller got traded. I mean, there were a lot of important guys that they shipped out. You know, I think they kind of had to do that because of the star power of the players that were leaving that team and just how close they were. I mean, when the day they sent that letter, they were like, I think 2 points out of a playoff spot, or they were just outside of a playoff spot.
Yeah.
When they sent that letter, and it completely blindsided the entire dressing room and Alain Vigneault, who was coaching at the time. So I understand why they felt they had to do it, because from the looks of it, from the outside, it didn't seem like they were in a spot where they had to rebuild. They looked like they were a pretty competitive team. And they made a difficult decision, and ultimately, I think, the right decision. Whereas the Canadians aren't in that situation. I think it's pretty obvious to everyone that the Canadians have a long way to go. They don't really have any players that would require some sort of explanation to the fans of why we're trading this player or that player. You know, they're at a different place. But I think that in terms of expectations for what this team could be in the short-term future, I think they've spelled that out without spelling it out. This is going to take some time, and it might even take longer than the 3 years that we were talking about with Martin Saint-Louis. But I think 3 years, just to kind of circle back to the beginning of this podcast, that 3 year period is going to represent a time where player development, the priority on player development will shift to becoming more tactical coaching, more coaching that is meant to win games and meant to be competitive. And I think Martin Saint-Louis himself said that he thinks he has the qualities to be a good coach, but he's going to have to prove it. Well, I think that 3 year period will allow him to prove that he's more than just a player development kind of coach, or more than just a player's coach. He's a guy who can, you know, who can make decisions and make tactical moves in game, bench, you know, make bench decisions, all the things that coaches have to do when every game is crucial to your ability to making the playoffs and securing, let's say, home ice advantage or whatever. But the concerns of competitive teams, you know, the coaching decisions attached to those teams are very different than the coaching decisions Martin Saint-Louis is going to have to make for the next 3 years. But he's going to have to learn how to make those decisions and how best to make sure his own development as a coach follows in lockstep with the development of his team.
Okay, last question before we wrap this up. You're talking about progress on the tactical side. Martin Saint-Louis was asked today if he was going to keep the same group of assistants and if he was thinking of bringing in somebody new. And so basically, we from what we can understand, his staff is going to remain intact. So all of his assistants can sleep well, and they're in all likelihood they're all returning. When he was also asked, well, do you think of bringing maybe a more experienced coach, a guy who maybe was a head coach before, who could serve, maybe the term mentor was not used, but that's what was suggested, a guy that could show him the ropes.
Someone like Rick Bonus.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah. Do you think that this is something that would be necessary for Martin Saint-Louis to really learn his craft in the best way possible?
I don't know if necessary is the word I use. I think it would be beneficial. You know, I think Trevor Letowski is kind of in that role now, in the sense of, you know, he left the door open to hiring another assistant. He already has three assistant coaches. So it's not as if I mean, you could hire like an eye in the sky kind of guy, or you can move, I guess, in theory, Letowski or Burrows to the eye in the sky position and bring in another guy. But I mean, yeah, I think, you know, when Martin St. Louis gave that answer, I did kind of think of someone like Rick Bowness, but there are so many coaches on the market right now.
Yeah.
That there's going to be a game of musical chairs here, and some of them are going to be left without jobs. And having someone who exactly can mentor Marty St. Louis in game situations, like Marty, you know, Marty was quite open about admitting that there were a number of things that came up during games that he wasn't exactly prepared for, and that he's learning on the fly and he's learning on the job, and he's very open about that. And I don't think anyone blames him for that. But I mean, having someone on staff who has been a head coach and can help him navigate some decisions that are going to come up that maybe he hasn't anticipated because he doesn't have the experience to have anticipated them. Having someone like that on staff, I think, would be a great benefit. I would hesitate to call it necessary, but I 100% believe that having a former head coach, someone with a lot of experience on staff to help him in his own development as a coach would probably benefit him a great deal.
Well, that answers my question nicely. Thank you,
Arthur. Well, do you agree? I don't know. Like, absolutely. How do you feel
no,
about
no,
it?
No. I do. I feel the same way. I feel like there's always, you know, there's a balance to be found, though, in the number of guys that you have on your staff, because it's not always the more the merrier, you know?
It's sometimes often the opposite.
Right, exactly, yeah. Because you want to have trusted voices around you, and if you start asking too many people, well, you're going to get too many different answers. So I'm not sure if a guy like the job that's current that Trevor Letowski holds right now, being a sounding board, and he was basically to Dominique Ducharme what Dominique Ducharme was to Claude Julien in the first place, and he arrived also in the NHL in that assistant coach job without, you know, prior NHL experience. I'm not sure right now if a guy with little NHL experience is the right guy to do that job, as opposed to a very seasoned guy who doesn't want to be a head coach anymore, who's an older coach who's ready to take on that sort of job. But at the same time, I mean, if Letowski and St. Louis have developed a kinship, they see eye to eye and they work well together, well, who am I to say that he doesn't have that his place on his staff? So I think that it could be good to add somebody new. But it's just I'm just concerned with just don't make it too big of a staff. That's all.
Oh, I agree with that. I definitely agree with that. You don't want it to be too big of a staff, but it's not unheard of to have three guys behind the bench and a guy upstairs. Because the guy upstairs right now, they don't have. That's Eric Raymond No. is kind of their eye in the sky, and doesn't even, Stefan Waite used to go down between every period to sort of provide some sort of information or observe observations he made during the game. Eric Raymond doesn't do that. He doesn't go down all the time. He does sometimes, but he doesn't go down between periods to really share anything. So he's hooked up with an earpiece. He can talk to I think it's Burrows who wears the earpiece on the bench at all times. But, you know, it strikes me as something that staff needs, even though Luke Richardson has tons of coaching experience, but not a whole lot as a head coach. And just talking about Rick Bowness, it's interesting, but Martin St. Louis played under when Rick Bowness was the associate coach in Tampa. So I'm just saying, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if Rick Bowness has closed the door on ever coaching again, or if he's not interested or he wants to retire. And if he does, then of course that's his prerogative. He's coached more games than anyone ever has in NHL history as an assistant or a head coach. But someone like a Rick Bowness would really help this coaching, help round out this coaching staff, because it's something that's missing.
Yeah. I agree. So it's probably something to keep an eye on for the next little while. Listen, as we hinted at the beginning of this podcast, we're going to have a bonus episode of the Athletic Support that will focus on the draft, on the top prospects at the top of the board, in light of what we are gathering here in Buffalo. In the meantime, well, I shall remind you two things. First, if you enjoy this podcast and you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, well, feel free to give us a note, preferably a 5 out of 5. But feel free to maybe write a little comment if you'd like the Athletic Support. So it's always appreciated when people do that. And also, if you haven't subscribed to the Athletic, to our vast contingent of hockey writers, baseball writers, and my God, all pro sports, you can do so as Athletic Support listeners by going to theathletic.com/athletic support. And I'll give you a discount on the first year of your membership. So that's an offer that you should jump on. In the meantime, Arpin, thanks a lot for your for showing up yet again. That's good. You're consistent.
That's what I do. I show up. I'm really present. Anyhow, thanks everyone, and we will be talking to you. We will be talking to you very soon from Buffalo, as Marc Antoine mentioned, with a special prospects edition of the Athletic Support. So until then, we'll talk to you then.
Bye. Thank you.